Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour for June 1st, 2017. Wow, is this year flying by. Tonight's main science topic, I have talked before about the origins of oil, but I'm going to go into some finer details tonight. But first of all, a little bit on, this is something I was perusing the internet yesterday, just looking for topics to discuss. And this one popped up on space.com, which is a huge disinformation science site. I mean, this is controlled information, and a lot of it is put there many times, as in the case of this story, to bait the public. In other words, to bait a topic so that it's in the public mind. And this was relative to outer space aggressors, it's called. Let me read the title. This was published actually on May 24th, space.com. And apparently from Seeker was the actual original source, author Greg Walters. But here's the title: Space Aggressors Train U.S. Forces for Extraterrestrial Conflict. So this tells you that the U.S. military is having war games where one team, called the Space Aggressors, are trying to imagine and define all types of tactics, weaponry, war games, trying to simulate what aliens would do if they came here to attack us, and then the U.S. Air Force is trying to defend the world against the aggressors. Anyway, I mentioned this on John Moore's show yesterday morning, but at the very end, I didn't have time to go into a lot of detail. This is the last stage. It's the staging for the last stage of the final episode in the New World Order regime of incidents. And now the Wernher von Braun secretary talked about this ages ago. And also Wernher von Braun, the German scientist, rocket scientist, who was the head of the U.S. rocket program that built the Saturn V moon rocket, the Saturn series. There was a series of Saturn rockets leading up to the Saturn V. Amazing vehicles. And, of course, as with many scientific ventures, the question is, did NASA really go to the moon? It's an unproven scientific claim. But Wernher von Braun was in the middle of all of this because of his knowledge of German the rocketry and all of the other things going on. But he said prior to his dying in 1977, he had an interview with Dr. Rosen. And anyway, this interview, he explained the planned New World Order last phase that would bring down the entire world into the one world New World Order would be a fake alien invasion. Now, let's go back to this article, Space Aggressors Train U.S. Forces for Extraterrestrial Conflict. Well, first of all, I thought everybody made fun of people who talked about aliens. Well, apparently somebody's taking it seriously. There's also discussion that there are lizard people taking the form of humans on this planet to operate and manipulate, etc. Now, I have had personal, very strange experiences around certain people, and I'm not going to go into detail on this, but I was at a conference, a scientific conference, and giving a talk, and I got done with my talk, and I walk over and get into the elevator, and there's one of the people that is very much very high in the development of this process to try and force the government to release UFO information or alien information, etc. And so we're all in the elevator, and I'm, you know how you are in an elevator, you're trying not to stare at other people, but you've got 10 people in an elevator, and it's So anyway, I just kind of glanced at this person and saw a blink, an eye blink is what it was. But it wasn't the eyelid that blinked. The eyelid just stayed there, and there was an inner eyelid that did the blinking, the cleaning, the clearing of the eye. I thought, holy crapola. I mean, I was just like shocked because I saw this, and I'm, you know, this was, you know, a very rare instance where you were right there next to someone, point blank range, looking, and I saw that inner eyelid blink. And so I mentioned this to somebody who I trust, who had been in the CIA, who was sent to investigate me, actually, and we became later good friends because I knew. Anyway, that's another story. I'm not going to go into that. But I mentioned this to that person, to which that person replied, oh, my goodness, this person that I observed is one of them. That was the comment. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, these beings are here. They're, and I don't know how they do this, how they get a human skin on top of them or whatever. But anyway, I saw that, and that is not a human trait to have an inner eyelid. At any rate, so something's going on, and there's a lot of secrecy revolving around this. The world bankers, the Vatican, and remember that the Pope Francis came to the United States right after he was inaugurated as Pope or inducted or whatever they call it. I should know, I was raised a Catholic, but anyway, after the current Pope became the Pope, he came to New York City, and one of the things he on his agenda was to make an announcement about the alien presence and the Vatican's knowledge of the alien presence on planet Earth. But he never got there because the other thing he was pushing was the UN agenda on global warming and climate change and control of water. That was another thing that the Pope was promoting. But he never got that far because there was so much controversy over the pedophilia issues within the Catholic Church, within the higher, especially the higher ranking members of the Catholic Church in the Vatican and the Sea of Cardinals and Bishops and down into the priesthood, etc., into the other brotherhoods and etc. But that became such a public issue that he did not talk about the alien presence. And this is documented. This is not conspiracy theory or something. This is documented. So anyway, back to Wernher von Braun. Wernher von Braun gave this interview in which he discussed the last phase. Now, he went through a whole bunch of discussions, and his secretary, of course, knew about this. She's the one that led out the entire series, and the first one was the Cold War. The next one would be boogeyman terrorists that would be used. That was phase three in the series of four worldwide controlled events, you might say, or series of events, social organization. And that would, the third part would be this international terrorism boogeyman, which started with the 9/11 incident, and then all of the successive terrorism incidents, of which they're ongoing still. They're just the bombing in the Kabul, trying to get us back into Afghanistan war, etc. But near the German embassy. But anyway, that was to initiate the cyber state, the matrix, the state that is all the all-seeing eye that sees and hears everything, that controls all information flow, that the think tanks define where they want to go with the public perception of reality. And this includes science, by the way. Science is very, very controlled. So this article that appears in space.com is a perfect example of planting the seed in the public eye and putting the seed of alien invasion. And of course, this is done in movies, and you know, the what was it, Independence Day, etc. All of the various movies that deal with alien invasion, putting it in the public perception. But this, where they're actually starting to have war games, and then, now, let's just imagine that the news comes on someday, and this was, remember, War of the Worlds, where Orson Welles came on the radio and never announced. This was back when the War of the Worlds, when the heck was that? That was in, it was October 30th, 1938. Orson Welles went on the radio on his weekly show, which was like everybody listened to that. That was like, you know, 60 minutes or whatever. And Orson Welles comes on, no announcement of any kind, just says that New Jersey had been attacked by aliens. And then there was this whole drama of they're killing the people, they're killing the troops, there's no defense against this. And, you know, people are listening, believing that this is actually the case. People committed suicide. It was like a struck fear in the public. And after that, they actually created laws that prevented fiction from coming on the radio as reality, that people had to say before and after and during or whatever, etc. But this has been in the public eye. I mean, comic books, you know, TV series, you know, we had Flash Gordon, where we had wars between the planets, Ming the Merciless, etc. So this is not something new in the public eye. But let me just ask you this question. If they staged, using Hollywood production and beyond, like laser light shows and holographic images in the skies, if they staged a show to make it look like our military was up fighting them and boom, and things exploding in outer space and, you know, people dying and the news covering it, I mean, they could put on a pretty good fake show and would be very convincing for the unsophisticated scientific American public. And that's what I try and do in my radio show, is develop a level of sophistication in the public that simply would not be there if it were up to Carl Sagan or Neil deGrasse Tyson or some of the mouthpieces, tier two scientists that they throw out there today for the public to listen to, the the fairy tale science they try and pawn off on you. But at any rate, like I say, step one was the Cold War. That was highly, highly successful. I mean, that worked. And then stage three was the terrorism, and that would bring in all of the laws and the basically the controlled state that controlled everything because of the security we needed for the public. But the last stage, the very last, would be a staged false flag alien invasion. And looks like they're greasing the skids for that to happen. Anyway, need I say more? I think you get the picture. But let me just add a little bit. What would you do if this happened? And then, of course, the government would lock down everything. All energy would be controlled. Food, water. I mean, there would be, they could poison the water, say that the aliens were doing it. And everybody would be in a bind. And by the way, let me throw this in here. There are some major league brands of water filters, and I've said this for years, and this is my particular theory, that there's a tremendous amount of marketing and advertisement and promotion for water filters that I used to sell, don't sell anymore, but literally don't work. And there are holes in the spectrum of toxins that they remove. So if somebody nefarious wanted all the public to have water filters that just don't work, mine do work. They take out the volatile chemicals, all in one filter, etc. But anyway, it would make sense to push a water filter on the public that literally did not work, so that you were defenseless when it came to poison water. And so I'm just throwing that out there. That's my particular you might call it a conspiracy theory, because that's what it is. It would be a conspiracy, and it's a theory. To me, it makes perfect sense. If someone were interested in doing that, make sure that all of the preppers out there had a water filter that didn't work relative to certain specific chemicals that were known, and then those would be the ones that would be put in the water, and people would think they're having their filters, their water filtered, but really not, relative to those specific known poisons that would not be filtered out by a certain filter that's highly promoted. Okay, so enough said. But back to preparation. If the War of the Worlds started, and as I mentioned on John Moore's show yesterday, it would be foolhardy for anybody with any weapons that have been developed on this planet, I don't care how sophisticated we think they are, if some spacefaring civilization has traveled across the galaxy to get here, and we're not going to go out there and somehow fight them. And so you take the example of, or the expression, don't take a knife to a gunfight, because you're going to get blown away. And so the military, imagining that they're going to go out and in our name defend us, start shooting. And I have heard from inside intel that I have had access to that this has actually happened. They've sent people out there to fight aliens, and they don't really fare too well. Let's just put it that way. But I certainly would not want these cowboys riding out there on their horse starting to shoot at aliens in our behalf in starting a war. But the biggest thing, and I talk about this in my book, The Diamond Principle, that as if somebody's looking at us, and we know they are, then if we cannot control our leaders, if we cannot control our military, and the military is going to go out in space and start shooting their six guns when there's a major league howitzer cannon and aimed at us on Earth, they're going to blow our society away. Just send it back to the cave ages and let us get going again, because they're not going to let any race off of the off a planet and populate outer space with their warlike and banking, you know, all of the things that were outlawed in the Old Testament. They're not going to let that that virus get off of the planet. You know, okay, you can do all you want on your planet, or blow yourself up, or create nuclear weapons, or Fukushima, or, you know, hundreds of nuclear power plants. Okay, you can do that on your own planet. You can ruin that, and we're going to let you do it because we're going to see if you can actually control your leaders, control the economics, control the multinational corporations that are giant monsters that are totally above the law in any foreign country, that run the governments, the world banking system that controls, etc. You can do that on your planet, but we're not going to let you off that planet and start doing that out here and ruin our existence. And that's just the way it is. Because imagine if we went to some other planet and we saw what's going on, and like what's going on planet Earth, we'd go, no, no, no. These people ain't getting off this planet. Just like with Iran. We have to look at Iran and say, it's not a good idea to let these people have nuclear weapons. And so the same thing, the aliens would be looking at us, or if we were at another planetary system looking at some people developing there, and they're all of a sudden developing this warlike nature and nuclear weapons, and all of a sudden they're going to go into outer space, we'd go, no, no, no. No, ain't going to happen. Because once they get the foothold in outer space, now you got to deal with these people or these creatures or whatever. So you're not going to let any maldeveloped, psychologically disturbed civilizations off of a planet. You're just not going to do it. You're not going to let it happen. Just like you're not going to let Iran have nuclear weapons, and just like we should not have let India and Pakistan brought all their engineers over to the United States, paid for the education of their schooling of their young engineers. They all go back to India and Pakistan and develop nuclear bombs. Hey, what's the secret about that? That's a formula for disaster. So now you have India, Pakistan, China, you know, another 10 countries literally with nuclear capability, nuclear bomb capability. It's not that hard to do. I could build one given enough resources and time. I could build one. I'm not going to. We learned that. All of our classes learned that in college. We had a guy who worked in the bomb program as a young kid teaching us physics. So we all learned that in knowing that that was that as physicists, young American physicists, that that was something we should be knowledgeable about. That's basic physics. Also, I have my advanced physics degree is in nuclear and solid state physics. So it's, you know, and once you understand these things, building the mechanism and the physical, the actual mechanisms for creating a bomb, it's just a matter of time and until people can put that together. And I dare say that North Korea and all the other countries that are entering that realm, Iran included, probably most of those scientists were educated in the United States, or their teachers were at some point. And so anyway, yeah, that's the issue of nuclear proliferation was promoted in the United States. But just remember that if their uppers, the uppers want a new world order, part of that, the process of getting to that point is to have chaos, to have everybody possible having access to nuclear weapons. And that so that promotes the idea of the one world government where they have to come in and create peace and harmony from a centralized world government. Speaking of peace and harmony, an interesting news coming out of Chicago, only 49 people killed by handguns in Chicago over the Memorial Weekend. They say that's much better than before. So, I mean, that is, it is beyond absurd. That's, remember the Vietnam War, the daily death count was 20 or 30 U.S., you know, military killed in Vietnam in a given day. More people are killed in Chicago in a day than during the Vietnam War. Oh, my goodness. This is, you know, in right in the center of the United States. It's a war zone. And on a little bit brighter side, I'm putting on my sales page. Now it's summertime. Everybody's off on vacation doing things. And so in celebration of Memorial Day to July 4th, these are the summer holidays, I'm putting an extra 5% discount on my water filter products, the main ones. These are the, you know, the higher price ones, not the four packs, but the 10 packs of filter elements, the Imperials and the standard size filter elements, the stainless steel Econo pack, the Econo filters where you get two filter elements plus 10, and that's a really good deal. So I'm taking another 5%. They're already on 10% sale. So I'm taking off another 5% and the high flow rate, the multi-round, I'm taking another 5% off those. So if you're interested in getting these, now is the time for the this summertime extra 5% sale. And what I'll do is I'll leave it up there till I hit a certain quota. And once I've sold a certain amount of these products at additional 5%, then I'm going to take that sale down. So I can't tell you how long it's going to be up there. It depends on how fast people react to this. So I've set a quota. I know about it. I'm not going to tell people how much that is, but it's a fairly good number. But people may respond to this quickly. And so this extra 5% sale, starting today, June 1st, and then running into, I don't know, how long it takes people to order to get up the quotas on these various products. So all of the high-end water filter products, an additional 5% off the already 10% discount. So it's a pretty good deal. If you're interested, go there now. And all of this stuff we have in stock, we're done pretty well. We last month, we had a little backlog on Imperials for about a week, but anyway, we're caught up and stuff is back on the shelves in stock. So And remember, made in the United States, in our own factory, it ships direct from the factory to you. It's the only product that's made in the United States for these water filters. Everything else is made in India or China or Korea or someplace, and there's no quality control at all. Believe me, it's the only water filter system made in the USA, in our own factory, ships direct. And when you buy that other stuff, or which you shouldn't be, but if you do, you're paying for customs, you're paying for shipping, you're paying for all of that. You're not paying for a quality product. So just the way it is. So anyway, and plus, I already have the best prices, and you're getting 10% off plus 5% more until I hit the quotas on the number sold of these various units, and then the sale is going to come down. Anyway, there you go. So go to the sales page, jmccsci.com. Off to the main science topic. Oh, the 1st of June, let me tell you what's coming this month in the paid cast. The paid cast is going to be the ongoing series Cosmos, and I'm really intent on getting this Cosmos series wrapped up. It's going to extend into the July paid cast, but then that's going to stand for all time as an expression, my expression, because of my scientific work against the establishment scientists in science that's being pawned off on you, the public. Now, I'm using the Cosmos series of Carl Sagan that was filmed and done in 2018. Then he did some updates about 10 years later. Then in 2014, Neil deGrasse Tyson, at the behest of Andruyan, Carl Sagan's wife, second wife, that produced with Carl Sagan the Cosmos book, which is still, I just saw an advertisement for the science books for the public. On the very top was the Cosmos series book by Carl Sagan, published in 1981. So it's still being promoted as the top of the level science. So really things have not changed. And when you hear deGrasse Tyson talking about his version of the Cosmos series, really nothing has changed. It's still Big Bang stuff. You know, everything happened. They're still using the same calendar from the beginning of time, the Big Bang, up to humans walking around planet Earth, that evolution did it all. The Earth did it all by itself without any external input. And so when you hear my analysis of this, of standard science, and those are the representative pieces of information that they have thrown out to the public, the deGrasse Tyson was produced and sponsored by National Geographic. So this was the preeminent discussion narrative of popular, of modern science, you know, dark matter, all this stuff. And I show you why all of this is completely bogus, and then I replace it. I don't just say it's bad and goofy. I replace it with my science, which is real science, which, of course, is not given any public airtime. Wikipedia still says I don't exist. James McCanney does not exist, is what it says. Go look it up. They used to have a page that slammed me, but it sent so many people to my webpage that they were actually, you know, quite good advertisement. I was quite pleased with the result, and so that they realized they were actually benefiting me. So now they just say I don't exist. Whatever. But anyway, the June paid cast, we have 5 weeks in June, so you get five paid casts in June. The 22nd of June will be another episode of Tesla's Mind, topic to be announced. But the other four episodes of the paid cast in June will be the ongoing series of Cosmos, the Real Story. And that's my response to the Cosmos series of Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson and Standard Science. So that's what's coming up, the paid cast in June. And if you haven't subscribed, it's $3.95 a month, less than a cup of coffee, and that's what you get. I mean, you will not hear this anyplace else. And when the Cosmos series is finished, we're going to do some video editing along with it and then put it out as a statement of my work, something that should last far, far, far into the future. Okay, enough of that. On to the main science topic. And just remember, please, the extra 5% sale on the water filter items. So the higher ticket items, and that includes the multi-round high flow rate filters for home, all what they call all home, all house water filtration, where you put that in and it filters for your entire house. We have the replacement packs of filter elements there. Okay, go to the webpage. You'll see it there, jmccsci.com. On to this week's main science topic, oil. Now, I begin my book, The Diamond Principle, with a discussion of deep oil. These are deposits of oil. I mean, oil, you know, like they convert into gasoline, etc. And the oil is found like 18 miles down. And so that creates a problem for the dinosaur bones fern forest theory, the what you call biogenic oil. How did the fern forests, etc., get 18 miles down? Or how did the oil from them get 18 miles down? When you look at it, the dinosaur bone fern forest theory does not hold water at all. We find oil in coal deposits, what you call dirty coal, has a high degree of volatile, so that when you burn it, those chemicals come out. It actually burns hotter because you have all of these volatile chemicals in there, but it's terribly polluting. And then what they call clean coal is basically dry coal, where you're burning the carbon that's in the plant material that's piled up. But if you look at a piece of coal, the train cars of coal are coming by, and if you, you know, sometimes some spills on the tracks. But if you pick up a piece of coal that comes from the coal mine, say out in Montana or whatever, or Virginia, it's like layered up plant material. It's like you took leaves and just slammed them down into big, big deposits. And they're all piled up, and some coal has oil in it, some does not. So that's a very interesting thing, because the process that solidifies, that removes the water and creates this carbonate material that's left over, it's like, let's take a step back. You know that charcoal that you use in your barbecue? You go to the store and buy a bag of charcoal. And where does that come from? Well, what they do is they take wood or coconut shells or something like that, and some, you know, growth material, some biomaterial, they burn it, but they don't really burn it up. They dry it out. They heat it up to the point that all of the moisture is out of there, and the only thing you've got left is the carbonate material, the carbon-based material that is the plant material, and then it's very pure. In other words, if you pick up a piece of wood, there's a lot of water content. There's a lot of fiber in there, and that what you do is you convert that fiber, which is high in carbon content, you convert it down to a form that's almost ready to burn, and that's what carbon is. And so, for example, I have carbon in my pre-filter. You get a bag of medical-grade carbon, and that comes from it's a medical laboratory process for creating carbon, but it's medical grade, you know, so, and there's, anyway, so when you do that, there's no oil in there. So the question is, how does this oil get into some coal, but not other coal? And that's, you got to answer all these questions when you talk about the formation of coal, because if you don't, it's like talking about water, some water, big lakes, Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, the Great Lakes, no salt, not a drop of salt, pure fresh water. And then you go a little bit farther, you go out to the ocean and you have high salt content water. So, you know, then you have other lakes like the Caspian Sea or the Red Sea or the other inland seas over there, the Dead Sea, which is the salt content is so high that nothing can live in there. Where did the salt come from? you find salt mines up in the Himalayas. The Himalayan salt that you buy at the store has a totally different salt content than current modern oceans. And the salt mines that up in the Colorado Rocky Mountains or deep in other locations, the coal has a different formulation, or the, I'm sorry, the salt has a different formulation than what is in current seawater. So wait a minute, that came from ancient oceans. So where did that salt come from? Why is it different than what's in our oceans now? Well, clearly, to answer these questions, you have to understand that Earth has changed many times throughout its history. And for example, the oil deposits that are very deep in the ground were created at the surface. Now, I'll be talking about abiogenic oil. That's a concept that was raised in popularity for a while. But the concept is that oil formed in the ground by inorganic mechanisms. And by the way, oil itself, by its very nature, is an organic molecule because it contains the carbon and the hydrogen, and by its very definition is an organic molecule. So the abiogenic or abiotic, sometimes it's called, oil formation process where it just naturally formed underground. How do you get those chemicals, which are locked in rocks and in the dirt, to form into one spot, all of them to migrate into the ground to create pools of oil? Well, that's a problem too. And the idea of abiotic water is the same issue. How do you get these rocks that somehow contain oxygen and water, or oxygen and hydrogen, to form these pools of water that are deep underground? Well, the result is that let me just insert my belief on this whole deal. My theoretical work shows that the water, the oil, etc., came from outer space, from our passage through the tail of large comets, and also during the time when Earth itself developed cometary activity. And this would have happened when we had, say, significant cometary activity in the solar system, where it connected into Earth. And I've predicted that we will find oil on the moon. Now, that would be a prediction that would definitely dump the both theories of abiogenic oil and the dinosaur fern forest theory. If we found oil on the moon, which I predict we will, especially the tar forms that would not evaporate, evaporate off the surface of the moon because of the low, the literally zero atmospheric pressure there. But we found tars and hydrocarbons, the long chains, on the surface of comets, baked on there. So it's something that occurs in outer space naturally. We've already seen it. This is not a theory. It's been proven. So that shows that hydrocarbons, long-chain hydrocarbons, occur naturally in outer space, in comets. And so there again, my theoretical work, the plasma discharge comet model, shows that the material is being attracted by the comet. And then the electron beam on the sunward side is basically baking it onto the nucleus. The only concept even remotely close to this in standard science is they say, oh, when the Earth formed 4.5 billion years ago, which is a crock also, because surface rocks have nothing to do with the age of the Earth or the central part of the Earth at all, as we can see. But the idea is, why do we have these pools of oil and water 18 miles deep in the ground, or salt? They find salt down there also. So that tells you that oceans were at that level of the Earth at one time. That's because the Earth is constantly taking on material. It is constantly taking on dust and material and hydrocarbons and water, and then we get these blasts of them. The ancients talk about the naphtha coming in, the burning naphtha coming in during these events like the Venus event. They talked about the rain of brimstone and fire. The brimstone is the meteorites coming in. And of course, when the hydrocarbons hit the oxygen atmosphere and the meteorites are coming in, it ignites it. And so that's what you see, the sky burning with the hydrocarbons coming in from outer space. And then over a long period of time, millions of years, who knows how many years, the Earth builds up surface on top of this and basically captures these surface pools of oil and water in regions, in caves, in what would be tunnels, whether lava tunnels, etc., where there's room for them to accumulate, and similar to the pools that are underground right now of oil, etc. But dinosaur bones and fern forest, no. The coal comes from fern forests and ancient forests. When Ignatius Donnelly, the lieutenant governor of Minnesota in the 1860s, I believe it was, wrote the book Atlantis and the Antediluvian World, the world before the Great Flood. And basically, all of the naturalists back then realized that Earth had had a great flood. And also they knew about oil. But Ignatius Donnelly was raised in the coal fields of Pennsylvania. And what they could see was a layer of coal, then a layer of gravel, then a layer of coal. So these were layered up over time. And so he realized that there was some kind of natural recurring process that created the coal. And sometimes the coal would be filled with volatile chemicals, and sometimes it would be dry coal. So how come some coal has no chemicals in it, basically no hydrocarbons that in the form of oil, and some is just filled with oil, just saturated with oil? And that's what we call dirty coal. And that's because during those events, when the tsunamis came in that just scooped up all that plant material and dumped it up along the side of a hill or wherever into valleys, etc., at the same time, there was a large comet activity with the oil coming in from the comet. And sometimes you had enough oil coming in to saturate the coal, and other times there was no corresponding passage through the comet tail. So some coal is dry, some is wet with oil. And so how do you get this oil 18 miles deep in the ground? How do you get salt mines 18 miles down in the ground? How do you get water down there? Well, it's because that was the surface of the Earth at one time. And the dirt had piled up and piled up on top of it. And that's due to the passage of comets. But the Earth is taking on material all the time because we are discharging the solar capacitor. We're bringing in material, water included. We're bringing in salts, the sodium and the chlorides and the other salt minerals that are in salt, in sea salt, are coming in all the time. And the reason the Great Lakes are without salt is because they were recently under the what we call the Laurentian ice cap, which melted within the last 10,000 years. It extended all the way out to Oregon. The scab lands of Oregon washed away when that enormous ice cap melted in a very short period of time. And the Mississippi River Valley, the upper Mississippi, is carved out. It's probably 10 miles wide where it's carved out. It certainly was not carved out by the so-called mighty Mississippi that now runs down through the center of this great valley. I know I used to go to school in a place called Winona, Minnesota. That's where I went to college, St. Mary's College, which is built up on the bluff overlooking this maybe 20-mile valley that was washed out in a very short period of time, and what remains is what we call the mighty Mississippi River. But that entire valley washed out in a very short period of time, washing down to the Gulf of Mexico, and when the great Laurentian ice shield melted. That was after the pole shift, after the comet came by, etc. And anyway, back to the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes had been under that ice cap And so all the salt buildup was up on top. And so when that melted, it all washed away, leaving the Great Lakes and the lakes of Minnesota, Wisconsin, etc., as freshwater lakes without a drop of salt in them, because over time, the lakes or the bodies of water get so they have more and more salt content. So anyway, all of this makes sense if you understand what the true history of the world was all about. Where does oil come from? It's not abiogenic. It's not from biogenic sources like dinosaur bones and fern forests. And the quantity of oil, let's just look at that. When you look at the quantity of oil, let's look at Venezuela. Let's look at the Mideast. Let's look at that vast area of Saudi Arabia through the whole Mideast. If you look at the tar fields of Canada, where did this vast amount of oil come from? If you look under the ocean, this is another great point about this so-called either biogenic or abiogenic. Biogenic meaning from dinosaur bones and fern forests, and abiogenic meaning that it somehow formed deep underground. We find deposits of oil, for example, in the Caspian Sea. The Caspian Sea, is down in the Caspian Sea in the base, is just a big, it's like an ocean of oil, and Russia has been pumping that out, and that's what the whole Afghan war was about when Cheney and the boys wanted to get in there, because the greed, of course, you got this big, vast amount of free oil that they could pump from the Afghanist side, but they couldn't get it across Iran. That's why they wanted to attack Iran and take out Iran, because that's the shortest route to get from the Caspian Sea to the ocean, to where they could run a pipeline, but Iran wouldn't let them. So they became one of the axes of evil, like Venezuela, because Venezuela wouldn't sell them oil and started to sell oil on the world market outside of the petrol dollar. So they became one of the axes of evil. Got sanctioned by all of the, like the United States and other major world economies, not Russia, who has backed out of this oil world, one world government oil concept. Venezuela has been under sanction like Cuba, so that's why their economy is failing. It's not because they can't manage their economy, it's because they're getting dumped on, and they can't buy toilet paper. They're being boycotted on a worldwide basis because they're not playing the oil game. And so in spite of everything you hear in the United States about all the trauma, etc., there's more trauma in Chicago than there is in the entire country of Venezuela. Anyway, that's another issue. But back to dinosaur bones and fern forests, it does not explain what we see. Biogenic oil coming from fern forests, you know, that we have deposits of oil at the base of the ocean. If the oceans have been the same for all these billions of years, then where did the fern forest come that formed the oil in the base of the ocean? None of this makes any sense. The abiogenic, where it supposedly came from deep deposits of hydrocarbons forming in the ground, doesn't explain the surface oil that we find when the two systems, abiogenic and biogenic, if you combine the two, they still don't explain what we see in terms of existence of oil. The bottom line for both, once again, being strictly scientific on the experimental method, in other words, you have to prove your concept, biogenic oil. Nobody has ever demonstrated in a laboratory how you get oil from dirt or decaying plant matter. You can get coal. That's very easy to explain. It piles up, the pressure drives the water content out, and you're left with the carbon-based material of the plant life. And you can see in the fossilized, in the coal, it literally is fossilized plant material. So that's very clear. Coal, comes from plant material. But some of it's dry, some of it is saturated with oil, you know, in sometimes one layer above the other one. Why did some have oil and some not? Well, neither theory explains that. How did you get the oil from the fern forest? If fern forests, in fact, create oil, why is there dry oil or dry coal and that has absolutely no oil content at all? Did the process not work selectively sometimes? You see what I mean? These theories don't explain it. And the abiotic concept, where it's somehow formed deep in the ground by non-organic processes, doesn't work at all. In fact, I think it's been pretty well, I don't like the term discredited, but simply it doesn't answer the questions of where we find oil. Then if that's where the oil formed, how did it get up to the surface? Because remember, when oil was first used by modern man, it was around 1200 AD in Arabia, what you might call Arabia, the Arab countries. It was sitting on the surface in pools. There were lakes of oil, and they would go there and scoop it up, and they found various ways to deal with it that it burned. It was used for fuel. The first tactical use of oil was for warfare. They would soak material like cloth with oil and to light it on fire, and they could use it as warfare, a warfare item. And it was then they learned how to refine kerosene and other derivatives from the petroleum. And so then, the rest is history. But it was around 1200 when they first realized, and so then they used up what was in the surface pools and lakes, and they dug down a little bit, and there was more. And so they dug down farther and farther, and so then they realized, hey, there's a whole bunch of this stuff down in the ground. And so then they started, the idea of mining for oil or digging a hole in the ground for oil and getting more of it. Just like digging a hole for water, the same principle. You just go down farther and farther, and your hole fills up with oil, and you take it out, and tomorrow you come back, and the hole is filled up with oil again. And, up until modern mining techniques or drilling techniques, now they're drilling deep into the ground. They want to drill the BP oil spill, I think, was 12 miles deep. And what happens is the tremendous pressure down there, what you're doing is you're basically poking a hole in the balloon. The surface of the earth is like a balloon. So the high pressure down below has a way to get out. And so you have this enormous pressure coming up this tube, and they couldn't cap it. They couldn't keep the cap on this thing. And once it blew, there was no way to get in there to cap this thing off. Until just, I really don't know what's going on. Nobody talks about the BP oil spill anymore. But literally, that's what's going on. The pressure deep in the earth is forcing the oil up the tube. And I've tried to communicate with people to stop the as a civilization, we have to stop drilling deeper into the earth. Because if you hit a layer where there's liquid down there and it starts coming up, you're not going to be able to cap that baby. And there's no way to stop it from pushing this, who knows what kind of volatile chemicals are, like around a volcano. The sulfur and the gases that come out of a volcano are highly, highly poisonous. And just a couple breaths of that, and it'll kill you. That's what can come out of the earth, those volatile chemicals. There's, the sulfur compounds. And, oh my goodness, yeah, there's stuff there that you do not want to be breathing. But, okay, so where does oil come from? Oil comes from the earth passing through the tail of large comets that are producing the hydrocarbons. And this, let's just go back to the Noah's flood, which was the earth passing through a comet tail for 40 days and 40 nights. Very clearly, that's what it was. And so imagine that if instead of just water, you have a high hydrocarbon content in the tail of the comet when Earth passes through, it's going to have basically a flood of water coming in from the outside, but hydrocarbons also. And the basically what the ancients described is the influx of what they called naphtha, the burning naphtha, the rain of naphtha, or fire and brimstone is another term. So we know from the historical record, and for science to deny this is ludicrous. Those people saw something, they're telling us it doesn't happen every day, it's not a frequent event, but it's amazing that we have history that explains this, that explains the observation, but of course standard science doesn't know about any of this with their stupid little dirty snowball comet model that doesn't work. Believe me, up in the upper echelons of science and beyond the New World Order or the Vatican, where they really have a high level, very sophisticated level of science and knowledge, because it's part of their secret society type of knowledge that they keep, and they want to make sure that the public does not know about this. So let's just take a few steps back here and understand the importance of comets in this whole process. And that's why they want to minimize comets. Oh, they're just these little icy wanderers. They can't affect anything. Maybe they hit from the, you know, demise of the dinosaurs. In fact, I thought it was comical when I was doing my paid cast. I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he assures you in one of the episodes that 50,000 years before anything happens again, he's talking about allegedly Venus affecting the orbital dynamics of Earth causing our ice ages. And he goes, yeah, it wouldn't happen for another 50,000 years. I mean, just ludicrous fairy tale science. No, I mean, just absolutely no basis for any of what they're saying. But it just, you know, anything to throw a blanket over real information. In fact, it was Venus the comet that came by Earth that caused the last pole shift and the, in fact, the ice age that, you know, and there are various comet effects that have occurred over the lifetime of the Earth that have caused mass extinctions, changing in the change of atmosphere, other action at a distance, issues like possibly igniting the sun to explode, and it just, you know, took a great deal of life off of Earth all of a sudden. All of these issues that would have happened due to the passage of a large comet and not hitting Earth. Remember, these don't hit Earth. They simply go by at various distances, etc. But, okay, anyway, I'm about out of time here. Remember to listen to my paid casts. This month, the ongoing series of Cosmos, The Real Story, and then also one episode of Tesla's Mind in June of 2017. Remember, an extra 5% off all of the major water filter items on my page, jmccsci.com, and that sale will end as soon as I hit the quotas that I've set on those items for sale. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.